Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
And welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blurring lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. If you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And also make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
How are you doing?
Oh, I am doing great. Life is good. Poetry is good. The temps have gone up just a little bit. And, you know, it's all great. And how about you? How are you doing?
Oh, it's been a little cooler down here than normal.
Oh, I bet you're enjoying that.
Oh, a little cooler than that, 20 degrees drop off, so.
Okay, so, yeah, not quite that enjoyable, huh? So, but I see that we have a couple of new members in Late Night Poets, Yolam S. and Zima Blue or Zima Blue. Very cool, very cool. And I saw you post some awesome news. Late Night Poets climbing up to spots 5 and 8 on a couple of lists.
Yep. Number 5 for the early shows, and number 8 for the after midnight.
Oh, man, that is so awesome. And know what, like Gene says in LNP, look out, Seth Meyers. We are catching up with him. So he better watch his backside. Oh, that is so awesome. Thank you for sharing that good news. Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'd like to welcome area code 704 to the show, who I believe to be Jody. So is that you, Jody? Maybe not. Well, area code 704. Oh, I'm sorry. Who is it?
I think it's me. I'm Dottie.
Oh, Dottie. Well, hello there. Hello.
Hi, guys. Good to hear, how are you?
Good to hear your voice. Oh, doing great. How are you doing?
Thank you. Great. Good to be here.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, so glad you could call in. That is great. And are you able to stick around for a while, or do you need to read and run?
No. I'm here for the long run. I'm here for the fun.
All right. Sounds great to me. Well, Rex, we do have, I believe, like 4 carryovers to start with. So let's go ahead and start with those.
All right. Start with Howling for the Moon's Love by Jenny the Deep. And I guess that one's for you.
All right. This is Howling for the Moon's Love, and it was a collaboration between Jenny the Deep and Jason James. And it goes like this. The lamb in wolf's clothing still growls and bares his teeth. In love, but with nothing to hold, nothing to keep close, howling at the moon that's never abandoned him. Yet the moon seldom howls back. He just knows he loves her lunacy. She lights up and illuminates most nights for him. Sheep-eating grin on his face, tears shed, but never out of place. She sometimes hides behind the silver clouds. His howls only grow louder and longer as her own tears pirouette down her freckled and speckled face. Of her glow, he couldn't be prouder. He's lost by day, though she still sometimes shines in the morning sky. With devotion, he licks her wounds after his own. Her light is the only lullaby that helps him get by at night as he tries to do right by the moon. And poem.
Nice.
I am so sorry. I had a brain fart moment there, and I was waiting for you to read comments, Rex, and then I realized that this is my show, so I read comments. So, Rex. Your thoughts.
Well, it runs two ways. The parallel sort of you take it literally for the wolf and the moon, that love that holds the two in place together. But you can also look at it as the moon and the wolf as metaphors for man and woman and the need to find each other, yet they don't because there is space between them and how that devotion still sits, even though there is space between them. So I like on both notes, but I do like the more tangible and easier thought of howling for the moon itself, because you listen to the wolf howl at the moon, you understand the loneliness in the darkest of evenings. So I could have done Jenny. That was a bit different.
Absolutely. Great observations, Rex. Thank you. And Dottie, your thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Very animalistic, very raw. It kind of put you on the edge as if something's going to jump out at you. I like it. I'm listening. I need to read it. So I'm a visual person. So I need to read these rather than to just hear them. So I would find that where?
Okay. Well, I'm trying to, are you in Late Night Poets?
Yes. You mean on All Poetry, right?
On All Poetry, yes. Okay. Well,
can you find it on our
Poets is uh-huh. where the poem links are posted. And if you go into Late Night Poets, you see the poem links, and if you don't see them, you just, when they're posted, you just refresh your page.
Okay.
Yep.
That would be the one. With...
Yeah.
All right. I'm on the page.
Yep.
But there's a lot here. Okay.
Yeah, but I'll go ahead and comment and
I see
thank
it.
You
I see
to
it.
Dottie. Oh, you see. Okay, mm-hmm. great. I thought this was a wonderful write, and I like Rex was saying, it can be taken metaphorically or literally, and each way really works well. I thought the way that Jenny and Jason wrote this together really had a nice seamless flow to it for a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of this on a more of a metaphorical level, and the idea of a love shared. And I really like where he says, where they say he just knows he loves her lunacy. To love somebody because, you know, they're different, because they have something unique about them. I also like, you know, how the imagery of as her own tears pirouette down her freckled and speckled face. I thought freckled and speckled face was a great way to describe the moon and how, you know, you see the shadows mm-hmm. of it. Another part I really like was when they bring in the moon in the morning sky. He's lost by day, though she still sometimes shines in the morning sky. And, you know, that is, I like that they brought that up, because it's always fascinating how sometimes in the clearest, bluest morning sky, you can see the moon. And it is a fascinating mm-hmm. thing to be able to see that in the morning or in the daytime. There's something that doesn't make it, it's not the same moon. It doesn't shine as bright. It doesn't glow. You just, it's almost like feeling as if you've lost the person that you thought you knew. You know, so amazing right and very well done.
Yeah, the last two lines were very nice, I thought. Bringing in the word lullaby, her light is the only lullaby that helps him get by at night as he tries to do right by the moon. I think that's very clever.
It is. And I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, lullabies are something obviously we relate to with the moon, and there's oftentimes a sense of comfort with them. So very cool. All right,
exactly.
Rex, what do you got for us next?
Car Crash Nightmare by Gary Rubin. The dregs of backwashed Oktoberfest float like dead refugees, face down at the bottom of once frosted mug. Leaves that usually intoxicate with autumn colors hang on for dear life, riding in a woodchuck station wagon with no seatbelts. Stale cigarette smoke and a peat odor of scotch nauseated. Carved jack-o'-lanterns expecting to be smashed, first cannibalized by trick-or-treat rats, masquerade in gray squirrel costumes, candy bar booby traps with razor blades, easier to swallow than news. Daylight shortens, but stretch marks lengthen. Cuddle children slap with the darkness of hatred, which no god preaches. Air raid signs warn what the explosions bring. Car crash nightmare that we're about to lose everything. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a powerful write about the terrors of Halloween night, not just related to Halloween night, but really to any night where we often get out of control with our ability to make reasonable decisions, whether through drinking or just being chaotic. And, you know, it's so sad to think that the majority of car crashes happen, you know, around holidays, you know, when people are drinking or when people aren't paying attention, you know, even, you know, arguments in cars. And it's fascinating to me when he brings up the woodchuck station wagon with no seatbelt, stale cigarette smoke, and the peat odor of scotch nauseated. You know, there's such dark, haunting lines, and at the same time, they have a nostalgic value to it, making me think of the fake wood panel station wagons that were so popular in the 1980s. Cuddle children slapped with the darkness of hatred, which no god preaches. Air raid signs warn what the explosion brings. Car crash nightmare, but we're about to lose everything. How just absolutely emotive and sad lines to think of the idea of a world filled with hatred and violence. You know, a world where children should be enjoying themselves and yet find themselves constantly victims. So amazing write and very well done. And Dottie, your thoughts?
This is the one by Gary Rubin, correct?
Yes,
that's correct.
Okay, yeah. I liked the way that it flows. I like the way the words kind of go into the other, and you're kind of surprised by the words that follow. Woodchuck station wagon with no seatbelts. That one kind of got me. Stale cigarette odor of scotch, nauseated. It's very much a scene, and it paints the picture. And it, to me, it's a picture of, well, like the 50s possibly, and earlier days. It's a bit lighter, but it ends very, very, very sadly. It goes through several emotions, I believe. It's a very, very interesting poem that catches you kind of unawares.
It does, absolutely, absolutely. Great observations there. I like that. Very cool. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Please share your thoughts and then go ahead and bring us on to the next poem.
The deeper motif and metaphor that runs in what the madness that's rolling out on the carpets today, because it hits on that note, that second stanza, the end of it. Candy bar booby traps with razor blades, easier to swallow than nightly news. That tells a heavy story in and of itself. Daylight shortens, but stretch marks lengthens. The idea of, we're going into winter now, and cuddle children slap with darkness of hatred. There's that motif of what you're hearing quite a bit lately of the not just the pedophilia, but the selling and transportation of children. And then that idea, which no god preaches, yet it's born not just as a singularity to one particular race. It stretches across the world itself. Air raid sirens warn what the explosions bring, a motif of what's going on as the world lightens up. And car crash nightmare that we're about to lose everything. The impression to that is, even though he's walking out of the top with the thought of drunk, we're running drunkenly headlong into our own demise because of we've forgotten all of that which is supposed to be held to heart, and we've taken in the darker angle of our own devices and morbidity, and to produce that which could be the very end of ourselves, because we're not smart enough to look back and say, hey, haven't we done this before? And before? And before? Yes, we keep doing it again.
Uh-huh. Groundhog Day.
There you go. I like that. Yes, perfect analogy.
Yeah.
All right.
Great comment there, Rex.
I've got False Reality Believed by Teresa Streshenkoff. And Dottie, why don't you read that for us, please?
Oh, okay. Sure. False Reality Believed. Sadness so withered and worn to the depth of false reality. Screaming out, yelling out, cursing this existence damned. Return with no solace, no peace to be found, heart shattered to pieces, love shackled and bound, kidnapped from a happy place to one so disheveled and disgraced, yearning, begging, times past, a time we didn't wear a mask. Shadow people go away, voices, please just leave me alone. Ratted, tattered, and oh so worn, exhausted, mind and soul. The light is almost bright enough to see and lead back to salvation, to a reality that is so full of taste, with such a sweet and warm embrace. End of poem.
Great read, Dottie. And what an excellent, haunting, dark write by Teresa. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad I left this one past Gary's, because this kind of walks off of Gary's. It's that notation, false reality belief. There's an eye-opening, an awakening here that come out of their warm fog, their rose-colored glass existence, and all of a sudden they don't like the reality that which they see, because they've ignored the signals, and they're hitting on that the back end of that. I want to go back to that blissful angle where I knew nothing, where it was a happier, more pristine place, so to speak. Because this one, I do not like at all.
Absolutely, absolutely, great comment there, Rex. And Dottie, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I feel a very intense nostalgia here, a looking back to a time that there was yearning, a time we didn't wear a mask, a time where now shadow people go, leave me alone. It's a very contemplative, I guess, poem. And it turns around. It starts withered and worn and ends with a sweet, warm embrace. I like how that comes full circle within all the thoughts within.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. It does come full circle. I like what you both had to say, and Rex, I like your observations on the idea of looking back at a happier time, and, you know, great comments there. I really like kidnapped from a happy place to one so disheveled and disgraced, yearning, begging for times past, a time we didn't wear a mask. And I like how kidnapped from a happy place works as a metaphor, as almost as if we ourselves take ourselves away from that happy place, or society takes us away as times change, Shadow people, go away. Voices, please just leave me alone. I felt there was within those lines the idea of a psychosis, perhaps a mental breakdown. I think maybe this might take a deep and dark look at some inner turmoil going on within the mind. So really just a haunting and powerful rite, and very well done.
It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Great point.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And what do we got next, Rex?
You Are My One by Darkened Auras. That one's yours.
All right. And if you don't see it, just refresh your page and it should pop up. So just so you know. You Are My One by Darkened Auras. I'm a woman of Venus, you're a man of Mars. I go searching for you through a sea of stars. Alone in this dark, vast galaxy of dreams, hearts entwined, dancing in purity streams. My legs wrap around your chiseled hips as you press into my ravenous lips. Pumping rush of our pulses in time, I relish in this divine treat so sublime. Eons pass and we have our differences. I feel pulled from you into far-off distances. We argue daily and fight all through the night, hurtful words and punches thrown into wee hours light. With your club, you knock the diamond from the crown on my head, and your spade of blackberries, your attack of my heart that is dead. I sit there picking up the pieces, 42 such is my life. The other 10 are still with you, my solitaire strife. I was made with the intent of having just one to correspond. I call out through the universe, but no others respond. They say there are plenty of fish in the sea, but what shall I do? 'Cause in this entire cosmos, all I see is you. End poem. And, I mean, that is such a heartfelt rite all the way through. And I'd like to hear your thoughts, Dottie.
With that, it's about a longing and a great desire for a deep connection and a love between two people amidst the challenges and differences that may exist. It has a very nice poetic flow. The subject matter is there's so much passion and intimacy within this poem that it really grabs you, and there are conflicts also within. It's rich, it's evocative, so much vivid imagery conveys that physical and shared emotional connection between the two, sensual, passionate, the ravenous lips and the pumping rush of our pulses and divine treat so sublime. Be still my heart. It is just absolutely gorgeous. And kudos, that's Rex's, right?
Oh no, this is Dark and Dora.
Darkened Aura.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But it is quite beautiful in so many different ways.
It is. It
what
really
do you think,
is.
Rick?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I will tell you the chances that I would ever read a poem of Rex's when he's on the show is very unlikely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I thought you started it saying
it. You're here.
What's that
mean,
Rick?
And this is a very evocative rite. And it is filled with a lot of different emotions, but it takes you through the ups and downs of a relationship, as you were saying. So great observation.
Sure.
And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, I did start off with a happy note in those first two stanzas, but that third one revealed the angle from where Christina was going with this. Eons pass, we have our differences. I feel pull from you into far off distances. We argue daily and fight all through the night. Hurtful word and punches thrown into the wee hours light. And it continues on from there, the thought of the crown being knocked off the head, the attack of the heart that is dead. They've gone from what once was happiness into a full delusional ardor and hatefulness. And she still hits on it. I sit there picking up pieces, 42, such is my life. The other 10 are still with you, my solitary strife. And then that last one, even with those bad angles, she still has an attachment that she has not been able to get rid of, because in this entire cosmos, all I see is you. Even with all the hard times, the battles, the punches thrown, obviously, and the clubs, so to speak, whether that's physical or mental, it doesn't matter. It's on the same angle. They've done each other harm, yet all she still has within her mind is him because of that initial attachment of perfect unity that she hits on with the dancing in purity streams in that first stanza.
I like that term, perfect unity. That pretty much nails it, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very true. I can understand this poem and relate to it because, you know, at the beginning of a relationship when everything is all beautiful and good and there's such a powerful sense of connection, and then when things go wrong, it's, you know, not easy to forget the good times, even after it's all fallen apart. I really love the imagery and the metaphor in this and how she used the deck of playing cards as a metaphor, and especially with the game of 52 pickup, the idea of all of the cards being
yes.
thrown, you know, and getting most of it back together, but not being able to completely get it back together because there's still a part of you, a part of your heart and your emotions that are with the other person. Even though they shouldn't be, you should have moved on, but still they're there. I really, all the way through, this is great. At first it starts out, it's so sensual and so passionate. And then as Rex was mentioning, within that third stanza, you really start to see what has happened, that, you know, with the passing of time, they no longer, not only don't connect with each other, but there's become this sense of just constant attack upon each other. So amazing lines and very well done. And Rex, when you pick up the next poem for you to read, if you just go ahead and leave comments when you're done reading, and I will be back.
All right.
Don't go too far, Pam.
I won't, I promise.
All right, this is Neat Paul by Peter Solomon.
All right.
Poke of thoughtful artists, reign depressed, to nod and contemplate patience, human, all too human, Nietzschean in the bargain, out of the weather. Church of lonely apartments, believe in yourself, sons of neon bespoken, an unsigned future to come. Popes of investment, been and gone, choir sung, many channel television, grandma hood in other rooms. Stations of choice, mystic locations, memoirs plural, Auburn subterranean, blessed with steps, grandsons anon. Pub Lidcombe Protestant, grandma to incubate, uncle forget, ice works forever. Any other reader to remember? Tell thoughts to pause, watercolor. Sketch a lighthouse, skeleton of grinning keeper. End poem. Right. What do you think, Doc?
I think, wow. It, gosh, it is so convoluted. It is about exploring social and cultural means, art, family, religion, and your own personal identity. There are so many elements, and it speaks of churches, apartments, investment, television, and memories. It touches on personal relationships, like grandmothers, uncles, people like that. It's a lot of words that are very simple and simply stated. Several abstract terms. Sons of Neon intrigues me. Also, Skeleton of Grinning Keeper is creepy and very compelling at the same time. It has a tone of nostalgia, references to many past memories. It's very family oriented. I suppose that's where church comes in, as if the church itself were the center of connection. I don't know. I don't understand Grandma Hood. Been and gone, Grandma Hood in other room. That may be something very specific to the poet. It's very well conveyed. It's very evocative, and it's all in all a very interesting poem. I'm curious as to your thoughts, Rex.
Me too.
Yes.
Thank you, Dottie. There is some. He does hit on the idea of Pope, Church, and Popes. But I think the difference up top is Pope, referring to an artist himself, and the thought of then of Popes and investment, been and gone, choir sung, offers up a different thought. The idea of reaping in money, so to speak, investing it, been and gone, choir sung, kind of hints on the idea of all that money coming in, yet not much of it really goes out to help the masses. The thought of many channel television, Grandma Hood and other room, has me thinking of they've indulged in too within that angle of do as you will, so to speak. So it kind of hits me with the idea of the church itself leaving the masses rather than the masses leaving the church, because where was that one? That thought with the...
You make things so plain.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That church of lonely apartments, believe in yourself, sons of neon, be spoken, an unsigned future to come. It's with the idea of you're leaving so much of traditional things behind because you're being told you can do this, and this now, that you're spending lonely nights now. The sons of neon often hits that idea of continuously going out to the bars, the angle of walking headlong into your own self-destruction. And the unsigned future to come, you do have an unsigned future, because if you're still walking that vein, then you're walking a vein that's not really good for yourself. It's on the whole. He hits on Grandsons Anonymous, Grandma to Incubate, Uncle to Forget, splitting a family. Any other readers to remember, like Tell Thoughts to Pause, Watercolor, Sketch a Lighthouse. It kind of hits me with that thought of the church used to be thought of as that beacon, that lighthouse in the night, which takes in all takers and nurtures them, so to speak. Skeleton of Grinning Keeper kind of hits me with the idea the only thing they're taking in now is money, and they're grinning heavily with it as the rest of us die.
That is very enlightening. But yes, I love the way you explain it. You shed light on things that may have been a little shadowy. Ice works forever in the second to the last stanza. What do you get from that?
You work what?
The ice works forever.
That
one kind of leaves me with a question mark.
It's kind of like frozen tears, but it also might hit on the idea of walking headlong once more into an ice age where we kind of die off to a large point. And
that is pretty heavy, yeah.
And there might not be another way to get back from that. It kind of hits me with the idea that we've walked so far from the path of what the church was supposed to be to us to begin with, that we no longer understand what the church really is in our own minds and hearts, despite what we're being told.
Exactly. For some reason, I got an image of like the old folks who would get ice from whatever location and put it in some sort of container, and that was their refrigerator for a while, like an old timey, you know?
Yeah, I remember this. They used to go out on Lake Michigan, cut cubes out of the ice for delivery.
Big trucks would bring it to people. Yeah. Boy, do we live in an interesting age.
And the big burly guy with the ice tongs carrying it up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 flights of stairs to deliver to the people in New York.
Oh yeah. calipers that just pick it up from both sides. Yeah. Yeah, you're good at painting pictures. I got a real visual on that.
There's quite a bit of time that a lot of people don't really know about because it's no longer discussed. And they don't understand how easy they've got it now compared to what once was without the luxuries, the amenities that we so easily look at now as something that's
been
there forever.
Oh, look at air conditioning. I mean, when I was a kid, it was a treat to go into a store in the town and, hey, they have air conditioning here, you know, and people die without it now. They can't function without all the conveniences that we're used to. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Yes, unfortunately. Pam, are you back yet?
I am. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
We have Playing with Klee by Dot Wright. Ha ha.
Ah. I thought it was Clay. I had professors that called him Clay, but I don't know.
It might be.
Klee or Clay.
I'm not the most perfect on pronunciation when it comes to something. So.
All right. Let's see. Where am I? Refresh. Mm-hmm. That was the one that I apologize for. I went way off the grid on that one.
Oh, yeah. No worries. It's still on topic. So all
but,
good.
You know, I feel like this is one of my better poems, and it was very good inspiration. Appreciate it. Well, do one of you want to read it? I love hearing your voices, either of you. So flip a coin, if you would, please.
Well, okay. I can read it if you like.
I would love it.
Okay, cool. Playing with Klee by Dot Wright. Master of color, form and line, candid. Childlike touch examines inner mind, abstract image blush. Translucent, dreamlike scheming, symbols wonder imbued. Musical machining, tunes escaping canvas, twittering, singing, dancing. Odd-built, whimsy creatures, organic rendered forms, draftsmen angled lines, hues of light play given, metal wings take flight. Tanisio gives cheering, fear-masked revolution, fire breath breathing, fire dirt, fire death breathing, cast in one, and poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what an amazing write here, Dot. You know, I really, really am glad you were inspired. And you were right. It is pronounced clay. I never knew that myself. Learned something new. So playing with clay. So that's really great wordplay there in your title. So very cool. And I didn't mind at all that you wrote to a different piece of his artwork. I do admire his artwork and the history of it and how there was this spirit of rebellion. And he was one of the artists that was considered to be a degenerate artist by the Nazi Party. And a lot of his artwork was lost during that time period. The history behind his artwork is absolutely fascinating. And I really liked how I could tell by the things you had said, like even in your AN where you say, I love Clay's work so much. You know, you have an appreciation and an enthusiasm for his artwork. And I think that I can definitely tell that. And the way you describe not only his artwork, but his mind is amazing. Translucent, dreamlike scheming, symbols, wonder imbued, musical machining, tunes escaping canvas, twittering, singing, dancing. And was it Paul Clay who had actually, there was somebody who had a piece of art called Twitters or Twittering?
Twittering Machine. The Twittering Machine, that was Paul Clay, And it's one of my favorites,
Yes, I actually had done a contest on Paul Clay before and had used that piece of artwork as one of the prompts. So I like that you brought that in. And brought in the way that he played with simple shapes. What he did really is he took simple shapes and he gave them, I think, for me personally, a more complex dynamic by having them interact in unusual ways. Fear Masked Revolution. I really feel like Fear Masked Revolution in part looks at the idea of how oftentimes people fear artwork that is different or fear minds that think differently. So just a really great write and very well done.
Thank you. I enjoyed that so much. And then I looked back at your contest and went, oops, I didn't follow through the way that I should, but I'm not changing it. Thank you for understanding that.
No problem. You know, and if you're happy with your poem, that's the most important thing. You know, and I really do like all of Paul Clay's artwork, and I'm so glad I finally learned how to pronounce his name. I feel just awful pronouncing it wrong all these years, but for this particular contest, I had decided to focus in on some of his still life, which is fascinating. I mean, all his artwork is fascinating, but his still life is fascinating to me because it's so different than so much of the other still life. Like a lot of still life is very realistic. It's all about the shadow and light within the artwork or the photography. And his is there's such a use of flat. You know what I mean? Like it pops out at you in the way that he like puts things around but doesn't make them three-dimensional.
Exactly. Flat, yes. Like stained glass almost.
Yes, yes. And such yes. a, like one of his paintings that has like a shrimp just like right there in the middle or something. Like, it,
oh, yeah.
It's like so
almost surreal.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Almost
yeah,
surreal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to one of your contests on Magritte. If he's been addressed, I don't know. Magritte's
Which
another favorite of mine. Rene Magritte.
Yeah.
Bowler hat.
Yes.
And umbrellas, mint, little Englishmen with umbrellas raining from the sky.
Yeah,
I actually have. I have done Rene Magritte before,
okay.
But he is definitely one worth revisiting. So you know,
yeah,
absolutely, and
yeah.
And
yeah.
Rick, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I'm gonna
Thank
go
you for reading, Rick.
Oh, you're welcome. Start with the picture itself. But to me, it looks like a child's image, an abstract image of his neighborhood. You've got the little note with the boat and the lake on the left side. You've got straight line streets. You've got little things that can represent houses and everything else. So I like how you played off of that with the thought, playing with clay to begin with, but you kept the childlike angle going in with each stanza, a childlike touch in that first one. Then you kind of hit with the dancing, scheming, twittering, singing, dancing again in the second, the odd-built, whimsy creatures in the third, and on the back end, you fire, death, breathing, castle one. So you're offering up distinct motifs that hit on the idea of a kid rolling through his, or a bunch of children rolling through the neighborhoods and what they get into with the thought of how they view it, how they see it, and how they might draw it. And you hit on, I like that. The thought with that second one, the musical machining, tunes escaping canvas, twittering, singing, dancing, that does a bunch of kids rolling through the neighborhood. The odd built whimsy creatures is a nice touch. I like that thought. The draftsman angled lines, hues of light play given, metal wings take flight. Again, but that last one, the fear masked revolution, fire, death, breathing, castle one, there's such a kind of pure note to how a child would look at this picture and see what they want to see because they view it differently than we would. And it plays off of that very well.
And I think Clay would love that you just said that, actually, because of his childlike, the childlike ease that he had to create his masterpieces. Actually, that last verse kind of is a tip of the hat to the Sinicio and the mask, or the fear mask, and the castle painting that he did.
I like that. And I also like that you use the word whimsy, because between your use of the word whimsy and Rex's comment, which I thought was great, you really pick up on the childlike demeanor that came through in Clay's artwork. So very cool. Great observations, Rex. And thank you for sharing that.
Thank
with
you. Oh, thank you, my pleasure.
What have we got next?
An Apple's Poison by Jessica Wheeler. That one's yours.
All right. Shiny and weightless, it boldly claims the space within a bowl crafted for fruit, carefully molded to sit appealingly, a perfect deception, mocking pursuits for deeper bites. Its polished surface draws the eye to the everlasting allure of painted plastic, a hollow core and absent flavor, with no essence within the artificial promise. We are starved and seduced by mere appearances, preferring to preserve, selecting what will keep, neglecting the substance of what may spoil, blind and malnourished by the toxic, vacant void. But how lovely is the pretty fake fruit and poem. And Dottie, let's start with your thoughts.
Oh, let's start with Rex.
All right, no problem.
I want to reread it.
Okay, Rex.
I'm gonna go with the ease of thought, the representation for the value. People see too much value in the shiny trinkets instead of that which is in front of them, that which is healthy, that which offers up something of substance to the mind, the body, the soul, the stomach even. The thought of plastic fruit offers up that idea that too easily distracted into taking this when it offers up that temptation to poison, so to speak, instead of looking at the reality of real fruit and understanding what that real fruit gives you as opposed to the plasticity that the world is turning into. She hits on it. We are starved by and seduced by mere appearances, preferring to preserve, selecting what will keep, neglecting the substance of what may spoil. In other words, we overlook those which we have to tend to quickly or within the very near future as opposed to that which can be easily had and kept long term. So the idea on the back end, but how lovely is the pretty fake fruit? It's kind of a noted look at ourselves and how easily we're deceived into the fact that, hey, offer us a shiny object, make us pay heavily for it, and we'll adore it forevermore, despite it being a failing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like your observations there, Rex, because it is so true. That as a society, oftentimes we are so easily distracted from the bigger picture with those shiny objects. So great comment. And Dottie, your thoughts?
Well, I would almost want to default to what he said because he just stated everything so perfectly. Like you said, just how people are deceived by outward appearances and the shiny things, those are things that are so visually pleasing, even if they know that they lack any depth or meaning. The poem it criticizes society and the tendency to prioritize things that are just surface level over genuine.
That is so true. That is so true. And not only, you know, because, and it's very true for when we judge people. Oftentimes we see someone who's physically beautiful and we don't bother to look at what's underneath or the same, you know, we might see somebody who's physically unattractive and not, sure, you know, look at what's underneath, you know. So great comment there. You know, I honestly have never understood the appeal of decorating with plastic fruit. It always just looks cheap and plastic. And I've never quite
like
got
plastic.
Why people thought that was something we should be doing. You know, but you know, at one point people thought
it's kind of a 50s thing.
I think the plastic fruit started out as a need to offer up something in the department store with those items that you used to use to bring home to offer put the fruit in on the tables. So you get a nice look at, hey, this is how you arrange it. This is the way you want to put your fruit within the bowl itself, and this is how you present your house to your guests. And it used to be that we always have fruit on the table, although now it's been so many years, and the fact that everything is picked ahead of time, ruminated, and then shipped out over the year past the season of their freshness. And we don't hold that note to the fruit bowl anymore because the fruit's not really fresh. Fresh
that
at the moment.
Is true. That is true. Yeah, there used to be a time you could set out, fruit and nuts and all kinds of just goodies out and for have things around for company. But that's interesting there, Rex. I still wonder, though, how did it, we go from the point of, being set up in department stores to some person going, aha, I think I'm going to start doing that at home. But
again, it goes to that fake plasticity, the inauthenticity of offering up that which you think looks good as opposed to offering up the real thing, which actually would look good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
what's up next?
But, I like the imagery in this and how she says, a hollow core, an absent flavor with no essence within the artificial promise. We are starved and seduced by mere appearances, preferring to preserve, selecting what will keep, neglecting the substance of what may spoil. We'd rather have what is false, what is artificial. We'd rather hear those beautiful lies than to hear the ugly truth because, God forbid, we learn something from the ugly truth. So an amazing write from Jessica C. Wheeler and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
In the Early 60s by Ken Smith. My father had a dairy in the townships below Montreal, and when we moved to Ontario, we had a visit by Ernie and his fiancée. He'd been an old boy himself, helping out around the plant. They'd all just come back, my mother with them, from Zella's, where Ernie had been switching price tags. And Dad had me dress up in my junior uniform and perform a couple of moves. I quit the next week after a girl in the class kicked me in the keisters. They went out at that night over to New York State, and at last call, the old man had picked up a mop and started mopping the floor. When they were once young and full of vinegar, as I sit in an empty table, writing this over a latte, in the sludge of age, in the loneliness of the flesh. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Ken Smith. And Dottie, your thoughts.
Well, I really loved Full of Vinegar and Kick Me in the Keister. That was, it kind of put me in the frame of mind that this is all like 1940s. It's another nostalgic poem that reflects on the passage of time, memories and how those memories make a moment in their time of their father mopping the floor in a bar. So many painted word images, I guess. Reading now. Sludge of Age, is that not nice? And the loneliness of the flesh. So much.
Oh, I said absolutely. It sure is.
Yeah. Irony between contrast and the father's youthful actions and the speaker's current stage. That's kind of a cool thing. Area, I guess, Montreal and later in Ontario, it just formed a very intimate view, mentioning the present moment in that empty cafe. And I like the way that it flowed and that the time, the exploration of how time passes. And how nostalgia is such an important part of memories I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because nostalgia is that idea of looking back in the past and seeing what was good about it. Or perhaps oftentimes I think nostalgia can be a bad thing because we can often have a misrepresented view of the past, you know, thinking everything was good and wonderful. But and while there could have been a lot, definitely a lot of stuff that is, you know, it can kind of be twisted within our own minds. I really like how you did bring up the nostalgia in this piece. And another phrase you used that I really liked was when you said painted word pictures, because that's really what he has done here is he's painted with his words. So great observations there. And Rex. It
comes to mind a painting by, let's see, who was it? One of the artists that I cannot mention, but it reminded me of paintings of not Whistler, but okay. I just had a brain problem here. Okay, sorry.
Happens to the best of us. And you know, I could start I would start shouting out names of artists, but there's so many out there that I probably could shout out about 150 before we got to the right one. So.
You just made me think of it. Hopper.
Oh,
Edward Hopper.
Yeah. Edward Hopper, yes. He was amazing with lights and shadows.
Oh, goodness, cafes. Oh, yeah. Slice of life sort of nostalgia. Yeah, I loved his work.
Yes,
anyway,
absolutely.
I'm redeemed now that I remember that. I feel better.
Very cool. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
It's the loss of vintage where the modern age has stripped everything from what once was. You look at that. My father had a dairy in the township below Montreal, and when we moved to Ontario, we had a visit by Ernie and his fiance. A dairy, a family owned. Businesses that families no longer own because they've been taken over by large corporations. The fact that he used to work at a place, he used to work at the plant helping out, but then moved on to Zeller, where I was switching price tags. And that thought of being dressed up in Judah uniform offers up a note of proudness of the father, even though he quit the next week because he got blasted. And then that second last stanza points to a kind of age where it was all about community. They went out that night over to New York State, and at last call, the old man had picked up a mop and started mopping the floor, offering up his father helping out the owner at the end of the evening. So obviously there's a note of community, a friendliness, a kinder age when people knew people, and there was a lot more temperance in attitude and how you treated people. And when they were once young and full of vinegar, now he's pointing out the note that he's older now, but he didn't have near enough of their ounce of vinegar. As I sit in an empty cafe, writing this over a latte cafe, hitting that note to a Starbucks, another plastic place, big corporate entity. In the sludge of age, offering up those corporate entities, in the loneliness of the flesh, the idea that not just the thought of the vintage or the nostalgia, it's a note to a time that has slipped into oblivion, and he's missing part of that because wherever you go today, even with a throng of people, you still feel alone because there's no connection.
That is so true. We do live in a time period where we're making it more and more difficult for ourselves, to connect with other people. So great comment there, Rex. You know, and it is such a lonely time. I mean, there's wonderful things about technology, some social media sites, even like all poetry. I wouldn't have some of the experiences I've had and the close friends that I have if it wasn't for, you know, meeting the people through all poetry and late night poets. And yet at the same time, oftentimes we find ourselves so stuck on the screen that we forget to look at real life and what's going on around us. And yeah, there is this, to me, this is nostalgic. It is that changing times, you know, and not only times changing, but the way that we change with it. When they were young and full of vinegar, as I sit in an empty cafe writing this over a latte, you know, our perspectives of ourselves changes. Our perspective of our parents and our grandparents change, and we see things we didn't see before. I did like the sense of humor, and Dad had me dress up in my judo uniform and perform a couple moves. I quit the next week after a girl in the class kicked me in the keisters. Ouch. That had to have hurt. I was actually that girl. I mean, not for Ken, but we had in grade school, we had this boy who just loved to chase all the girls, and one day when he was chasing me, I got tired of it, so I just stopped, turned around,
kicked him in the keister, huh?
I did. I kicked him in the keisters with my Mary Janes, and you know how those Mary Janes are. Yep.
Do it, girl. Girl power.
That's right. Girl power with Mary Janes.
Awesome.
But see, I keep looking at Zellers, and what's weird to me is I swear to goodness we had a Zellers in Spooner, Wisconsin. But it seems to be a place, obviously, that's in Canada. But I wonder if they were started out in Canada and kind of worked their way down to some of the northern states like Minnesota and Wisconsin. Because I know I've seen that building before. And that name on a building before, and I know I've never been to Canada. So, but yeah, this is a brilliant write that a lot like Paul Klee's artwork. Ken takes these simple objects of life, and you know the idea of those small moments of life, and makes them into a bigger, complex picture of mm-hmm. as Rex was mentioning, changing times. So excellent write and very well done.
And, oh, well,
I think it was.
There's a Zealous Skiing Sports Store in Green Bay.
Socrates or Aristotle. Huh?
Oh.
It brings to mind Socrates or Aristotle, their thoughts on changing times and children of the day, and how I think they said that children love luxury, have bad manners, they don't respect authority or their elders. I used to know this. They don't rise when the elders enter the room, and they face up to their parents. They chatter when they shouldn't, gobble up all the sweets at the table. They cross their legs, blah, da, 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 da. But it was, like, written in, like, hundreds of years ago. And the more things change, the more things stay the same, you know. It's
that
different
is so
scenarios.
True. That is so true, and it just gets worse and worse. I remember, back when I was a kid, you know, like in the 70s, 80s, 90s, I remember talking bad about my parents behind their back,
mm-hmm.
but I knew never to say anything. And kids nowadays, they will just say directly to their parents' faces. And it is something I would have never. One time me and my cousin got caught calling one of our aunts Auntie Bitch.
Uh-oh.
She's a wonderful woman. You know, she's a great woman, but she had her strict moments, which was, you know, understandable.
I'm loving this.
As you can imagine, we got in quite a bit of trouble for that. And Rex, what were you saying about Zellers?
There's a Zellers ski shop, ski and sports shop in Green Bay.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's the same type of Zellers.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, what do we got next, Rex?
Desert Sunrise by Betty Page. And Dottie, why don't you get that over, please?
I love me some Betty Page. All right. Desert Sunrise. Sapphire blue skies. Ribbon above desert sands. Sparkles so golden. Magical starlight. Shimmering, twinkling, bright stars adorns brand new day. Beautiful evening, slowly night transitioning with emerald pots. Pouring cups of tea, aromatic cinnamon, peach coral teacups. Melodies swirl round, dark skies fading in colors. Fitted brand new day. Magical sunrise, bright red, orange, yellow sun, emitting such warmth. Feel its sweet embrace as sunlight kisses your cheeks. Flowers awaken, sweet violet pinks, amid sea green emerald seas, colorful roses. Blooming on table, best country style breakfast brought to us in bed on our honeymoon. My Hasselbald takes our pictures, captures this moment at Palm Springs Resort. Aerial tram in background moves up the mountain. Tall swaying palm trees, aloe plants strewn along sand, beautiful gardens. Surrounding blue pools, mid-century style hotel. Sweet retro daydreams, wandering desert, wonderful whirlwind, romance. Brand new adventures, we're hiking up hills, gazing at beautiful views, bright neon rainbows, majestic cactus as far as the eye can see. Sweet desert sunrise.
Wonderful read there, Dottie. And what an absolutely stunning write by Betty Page with her 575 line. I've only gotten to be around the desert like once in my life. But it is, you know, to me, a fascinating place. I mean, I think more than any other type of element around this world or habitat, it's fascinating because the whole idea of the balance in life and death and the way that, you know, the plants and the creatures have to adapt in order to survive. And yet it's so open and so spacious that everything about the sky, you look up and notice the stars shining bright, the sunset. I think, you know, sunsets on the desert or over the ocean are some of the most beautiful, or sunrises. I also like how this brings in the other senses, like when she says pouring cups of tea, aromatic cinnamon, peach coral teacups. I really love aromatic cinnamon because, you know, cinnamon, cloves, all those different spices that are so rich. What was that?
I said you can smell that part of the poem.
You really could. You really could.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely. And this is a beautiful romantic rite. The idea of spending a honeymoon together, you know, tall swaying pine trees, aloe plants strewn along sand, beautiful gardens, surrounding blue clouds, mid-century style hotel, sweet retro daydreams, wandering desert. I like wandering desert because it makes me think of the whole idea of like bands like the Doors and the Eagles going out into the desert and, you know, having those moments of visions and, you know, just something very meditative about the idea of getting lost in the desert and finding them yourself. I also like that you went with Hasselblad, like an actual like brand of a camera, rather than just using the generic term camera. You know, I thought that was a great touch. Mm-hmm. And really a wonderful rite on appreciating the unique beauty, not only of the desert itself, but between the connection of two people. So very well done. And Rhett, your thoughts?
I think the Hasselblad was intentional because everything else points to it. The Hasselblad takes great still pictures in a nice large format. Anyway, because you'd offer this
well, I can't imagine somebody using the word Hasselblad accidentally. So,
okay,
yeah, I'm sure you're right.
But it's deliberate, and she left it for all the way down here because everything else hits on singular moments at a particular point. The sapphire blue skies, above the ribbed desert, above the desert sands, and shimmering, twinkling, dark starlight, slowly night transitioning. So you're getting each singular note to what's emerging in the moment. And you see that with the note of the picture taking as it goes. Pouring cups of tea, aromatic cinnamon, peach, coral, teacups. That is a pointed significance to not just having tea in the moment, but the thought of the sky opening up, cinnamon clouds, peach, coral, those tones of sunlight coming up, and then the thought of dark skies fading, then the bright red, orange, yellow sun offering up warmth, it kisses your cheeks, another moment, then the sweet violet pinks. As there's, each note is a picture on its own walking down the poem, until you get to the final back end, where she's sitting on that note of where she is, the mid-century hotel, wandering desert, brand new adventures, hiking up hills, bright neon rainbows, majestic cactus. So there's the full revealing on the back end, but it's taken that that full journey from each little three-line motif in the moment, picture frame by frame by frame by frame, until you get to the back end.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. And you're right. Great observation there. And the idea that the last few stanzas are the idea of taking those snapshots. So
yeah.
Great comment. And Dottie, your thoughts.
I felt like I was peeking into a family album or into a treasured box full of memories. It was so beautifully done and so, what's the word? Like I said before, you could smell it, you could feel it, you heard it, you felt it. It
enveloped all the senses.
Yes. Odd fact about Betty Page. Okay, this is kind of off topic, but maybe worth whatever. She went to church with Smokey Robinson. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah. And I found this out because she read a poem that I had written about Smokey Robinson and told me about it. And I thought that was pretty cool. She is cool. Very interesting woman who has a lot of interesting moments in her past. And anyway, I love the way that she wrote there. It's sweet. And you know what? There aren't many sweet poems anymore, are there?
It is. It is. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And what do we got next, Rex?
The Mud of War and the Broken by Liquid Minds Forever. That was yours.
Moi?
Yep.
All right. All right. Death lies muddy and flat, a splat, a weird-looking cat who sat and spat, and that's that for that damn cat. Broken his heart, turned brown, mud's hound, flat, no sound, none come round. He's bound to what's by what, each rut's muttered sound. Children roll and loll in the mud, chocolate tootsie rolls of crud, silent splat, damned cat, snoring thud, potato spud, flowered bud, born of mud, another cat sat spat, mud dud, end poem. Oh, that was fun. Yeah, and Dottie, let's start with your thoughts since you seem to enjoy this.
I'm trying to find it so I can make any, you know, so I can have things to refer to. Set somebody up first, please.
Sure. Well, let's go ahead then, Rex, and start with your thoughts.
Well, I got to go with the children's angle again. Death lies muddy and flat, a splatter, weird-looking cat, and that's that for that damn cat. The sort of creating kids playing in mud and creating things. Again, that's the same thing. Children roll and loll in the mud. Chocolate tootsie rolls of crud. Because, hey, it gets everywhere. Silent splat, damn cat snoring. But, again, kind of getting into the muse of what the mud plays out at. And it's usually always got with the kiddies. Potato spud, flowered bud, torn of mud, another cat, that mud dud. The pictures, what they can create in the moment. And it does have a strange look at it. You can picture this as a number of things. Even that, it could be eggs and pork chops in a frying pan at one angle. And could be a bunch of other things at other angles. So the idea of in the moment, what you can create with what you've got as a brown mass motif.
Absolutely. Yes, you could tell. She definitely dug into this prompt, and which does have an appearance of like children playing with mud, as you were saying, Rex. So great comment there. And Dottie, your thoughts?
I'm back. I like the bat, 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 bat. You know, like it just goes pow, 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 pow. In the way that it's delivered, the sound of it. It is hysterically funny. It's fun. And I did a giggle snort at Tootsie Rolls of crud, which in my mind, okay, and my mind is a strange place to be. I'm thinking, you know, Tootsie Rolls of crud must mean something that came out of an animal's back
Yeah.
Time cord.
Well, it makes me think of how cats often will take a dump right in the sandbox if you don't keep it covered up. Yep.
Right. And then the splat, damn cat, snoring thud. It has so much punch, punch, punch. You know what I'm saying? As far as its delivery, it's boom, boom, boom. And that's what puts it apart from many, many other poems. It has such percussive appeal, I suppose. And it's fun. It's funny. You can take it so many different ways. And I pretty much have to say that I love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, she definitely had fun with the wordplay and the rhyme and flow, which does have a very percussioned feel to it, as you were saying. I like that opening line, death lies muddy and flat, a splat, because there is this sense of humor throughout this, right? And with an opening line like death lies muddy and flat, you can't help but think of the idea conquering over death. Although I do have to say, it also makes me think of roadkill, and maybe like roadkill cafe. That's possum
like
stew.
A flattened animal. Yes.
Yes.
But
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
And to look
exactly
at the visual, it's pretty funny. It makes it more interesting and humorous.
Yes, it does. Yeah, the idea of a flattened cat on the road. And it makes me think of obviously a literal cat, but also of the going back to like the 1930s, 40s with the phrase hep cat, or calling somebody a cool cat, and we're ending with like another cat sat spat mud dud. It's like the idea of, you know, you're no longer the cool cat that you think you are, and maybe you never were. You're basically just this dud. You know, you're basically just this empty muttering sound that's been splatted on the side of the road. So. What an absolutely clever write. And very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
A Thousand Ways to Die by Scott Sharp.
Mm.
Frozen, mid-step, monotone cries, there's the bill. Broken pieces run over, poked in the eyes, hung from the balcony, flung from the roof. Hit crossing the street, heightened voice on a Saturday night, head bitten by the dog, cuneiform tooth marks catapulted onto a wall, sharp McKinnon splatted on a camera. Oh, Mr. Bill, you found a thousand ways to die.
I did wonder if Rex was going to go with the Mr. Bill voice. Hey, Mr. Bill.
That's
oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
and what did you think, Dottie?
Oh, I'm thinking about like the years of pot smoking and watching all that on TV in college about, oh no, Mr. Bill. It's pretty much kind of that experience, frozen mid-step. I love the way it just, again, staccato, would that be the word? It's just like bam, bam, bam. And it tells so much in simple stated words that actually, the rhythm is larger than the words that are spoken, actually. And it's just as crazy as Saturday Night Live was. Run over, poke in the eyes, hung from a balcony, flung from a roof. Oh, no, Mr. Real. You know, it's just it's stupid funny and adorable. And
it
I'm
is,
laughing.
It is. It is quite clever and humorous, you know, especially and nostalgic in its own way, you know, making
mm-hmm.
you think back on the Mr. Bill and that cartoon. So, yeah, very cool. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, it goes back to the early days of Saturday Night Live when it was actually worth watching. I mean, that first
yeah,
crew
sure.
of Aykroyd, Belushi, and company. Oh, God, they were funny as hell. And that's when Mr. Bill got his introduction back in, what, 1974? So,
and Bill was certainly a man made of clay.
Yeah, yes. And it was funny for all. It did get escalated, as Scott points out, and it didn't last all that long, but it was a funny little shorts thrown in to the mix around the irreverence of that crew that started the series that still runs today.
Yep. Irreverent
Absolutely.
And wrong and so wrong.
God, yeah. Bill Murray, Belushi, Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd,
mm-hmm.
Garrett Morrison. Jane Curtin, William Newman, and Gilda Radner. What a crew that was.
Yes. Those were the days, my friend.
Yes, they were. The samurai...
yeah.
Well, whether it be the restaurant owner or the dry cleaners. And the cone, and the introduction of the cone heads. And the killer bees.
Oh,
now, those
God,
are fun
yeah.
times.
Consume mass quantities. Stoneheads.
Yeah, those were some great ones. I mean, really just classic stuff, you know.
I actually met Bill Murray's brother a couple of years
ago. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. He was driving around an old like police car and yeah, kind of a Blues Brothers sort of thing. Bill Murray, right? Yeah.
That was Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi were the Blues Brothers.
I'm at Belushi's brother, yeah.
Oh, okay,
oh Jim
cool.
Belushi, okay.
Oh.
Too many drugs in the 70s, y'all.
well, great comments. Yeah, I really enjoyed this write and how it takes a look at, you know, classic, funny humor television, but also on how it's easy to laugh at death when we're looking at it through the eyes of humor done by claymation, and how easy it is to dismiss death until we have to face the reality of it. And I really like this all the way through, but especially where he says, crossing the street, heightened voice on a Saturday night, head bitten by the dog, uniform tooth marks catapulted into a wall, shot from a cannon. I mean, all the way through, one line leads into the next. Mr. Bill, you found a thousand of ways to die. And I think there's a punch to this, and especially in that end line, because it's like, Mr. Bill, you can find a thousand ways to die, but all we have to do is find one. So I do think there's an underlying message beneath the humor. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Rotten Apples Rolling Out My Door by Jenny the Deep. And Dottie, that one's for you, please.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Let me find it. Okay. Rotten Apples. Yes. Jenny the Deep. Okay. Rotten Apples Rolling Out My Door. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I can't believe this is still happening. Had my apples all aligned, neat in my bowl, growing apart, bruises our ripe home. Nonchalant envy poisons this bunch of apples. Malicious toxins are spread by the mouthful. An apple a day keeps the doctor away, but laced with pesticides is too late. One by one, off the table we fall. After each and every tarnished phone call, let the rotten apple roll out my door of its hazardous bite. I can't take any more. End of poem.
That was great. Fun. Yes, and you did a great read of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, she hits it right up top. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree. There's an understanding in that note because she picked the one, yet understood the apple and its nature to begin with, and can't believe this is still happening. Growing apart, business bruises our ripe home. And then that second one really hits the note. Nonchalant envy poisons this bunch of apples. Malicious toxins are spread by the mouthful. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. But laced with pesticide, it's too late. I like the metaphorical angle bent on this because it does offer it up as a more palatable treat as opposed to the bitterness and the anger that comes through this and the need to actually escape the toxin altogether.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is so true. That's so true. Great observations there, Rex. And I did like her use of idioms and how she put an idiom and then had an answer, like where she said, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but laced with pesticides, it's too late. You know, and that is, and you brought that up, Rex, and it's like I said, it's so true. We live in a world where we think we're being healthy, but you're just, you know, poisoning ourselves. And, you know, I really have especially a difficult time with those Red Delicious apples that got that horrible waxy coating over them just to make them look pretty. And I think Jenny does a wonderful idea of digging into that idea. But I also think that it's that idea of how the people we hang out with affects us when, you know, the one rotten apple spoils the whole bunch, that idea that the people you sit nearest to are going to be the people who really most affect your personality. And when you sit next to rotten people, when you sit next to negative people, you're going to pick up on that negativity. So great write and very well done. And Dottie, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
That was fun. I see that there are metaphors used in that the apples represent family members, I thought, and toxic behaviors between them, maybe that have been passed through generations. As you said, one bad apple, da 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 da. Yeah, I kind of feel that. I sense a bit of frustration and maybe even disillusionment with family and some of the negative dynamics within. Although it is written in a sort of whimsical and cute manner, I think it goes deeper, and it delves into families and some toxins and some poisons and things that are underlying all of the things that we feel are safe. And it points a finger at that, and it also points a finger at all of us to be wary. And I really enjoy how this was all spoken and stated. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah, you're right. There is a message here about being wary. So, yeah, wonderful comment, and definitely. So, very cool. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Yeah, let's see. Tea Time Tactics of Two by Postwoman. That one's yours.
All right, here we go. The traffic between tables is drying up, and the waiters in white are lazing around with trays as if on an empty station platform connected to an island where the breeze is cool, but the warmth of quiet doesn't let the tea on our table lose its flavor, but we lose ourselves in the diction of the inarticulate as the fading afternoon light falls on the space between us, two oysters and two shells, two favorite vowels in foreign language, kettles and kettles of stony light, glass doors of Darjeeling, the light weight of sips and the scent of the solipsism of ladies' slippers, 100 possibilities of a billion burrowing bees. End poem. And what an absolutely beautiful write. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, considering I'm going to go with, this could be a couple, but I'm thinking two women who at one point were friendly but have let that slip between them because of some slight or other. The breeze is cool, but the warmth of quiet doesn't let the tea on our table lose its flavor. But we lose ourselves in the diction of the inarticulate, and not speaking as the fading afternoon light falls on the space between us. Two oysters and two shells, two favorite vowels in foreign language. They've lost the note to a voice between them in the moment. Kettles and kettles, the glass doors Darjeeling. They offer up a note to something exotic. Yet on the back end here, the scent of solipsism of lady slippers. 100 possibilities of a billion burrowing bees. The billion burrowing bees, the thoughts that are twisting in each mind as to, all right, how do we have each of us handle this? And what do we make of the silence that has left us in this moment? Because you're hitting on the thought of the scent of lady slippers. Your minds are drifting past the note of the two sitting at the table to begin with, because it's supposed to be tea time, supposed to be a time of reverie and conversation, tea, biscuits, scones, such, yet there's nothing here except that cool breeze.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, you do really see that idea of the silence becoming the distance between them. So great comment there, Rex. And Dottie, your thoughts?
Oh, I was afraid you'd say that. I see that I feel that within this restaurant there's traffic between the tables and dying down of that, and the waiters become very idle. There's a speaker and then another person. I'm not sure if it's women, and they're enjoying a cup of tea and losing themselves in the conversation. And it also mentions fading afternoon light, that gives it space, and the two people that are within that space. Let's see, this is a feeling of intimacy between the two and a sense of tranquility. There's the phrases, the breeze is cool, and the scent of solipsism of Lady Slip, a lot of worth towards the poem as a sensory sort of thing, includes metaphor. It is one of the poems that I cannot wrap my brain around, honestly. I'm trying hard. It's a conversation. I sense tranquility. I sense an intimate urgency. But beyond that, I'm kind of out there, guys. And, yeah, I have no answers. And I guess I failed the test. I'm sorry.
Well, it does paint a wonderful picture, and no worries at all. Okay. I like the way that you're absorbing the poem, and some poems do deserve and need to be read more than once to really take them all in and to take in the underlying message, myself, when I read this poem, I think of how for many people in many cultures, tea time, especially with friends and family, it is a habit practically. It's something you do almost like every day. And so there seems to me to be this idea of these two people, these two friends getting together out of habit. Even though there's been this emotional distance between the two, and they no longer know what to say to each other, they feel so different from each other, and yet they continue out of habit to meet. I really like the glass doors of Darjeeling, the light weight of sips. That it makes me think first of all of those tea kettles. Have you ever seen those glass tea kettles, and then you put them in the blooming tea, and oh man, I would love to have one of those. It's so beautiful looking. I watch videos of those, and it's just beautiful. But how the tea itself, becomes a distraction from what is truly going on in life and in the relationship. And I feel like the idea of the waiters lazing around with their trays is that idea of a loss of ambition in life. The billion burrowing bees, those I think Rex brought that up, is the idea of those constantly nagging thoughts of what happens from here. Yeah, exactly. That just nag at you. But I really thought this had wonderful, thought-provoking, amazing imagery and metaphors throughout, and was a great look at loss and loneliness within a world that has come to a standstill. So excellent write and very well done. And let's go ahead and fit one last one in. So what do you got for us, Rex?
A Shape Too Far by Weaver of Dreams.
Oh, no, Mr. Bill.
In another realm where shapes oft converge amidst lines and angles, a strange encounter as a peculiar shape sought its first encounter. On that day, the weird shape decided to speak. Oh, square, oh, triangle, please let me confess. My form is so absurd, I don't think I can impress. The square chuckled, holding its sides so straight. In symmetry and uniformity, we find lots of charm. So yes, your shape does sound a whimsical alarm. The triangle knotted, its angles cleanly defined. With all your curves and bends you mesmerize, a shape like yours defies any geometric surprise. So, a square, a triangle, and this unknown shape together decide to lead to thus defy the norm. As bonded with each other, a new shape took form. In this tale of different shapes, rebel thoughts, and a land, if we stay in our box and lines or predictable schemes, there will never be the odd shapes and the limitless dreams. So embrace your otherness, your quirks, uniqueness too. Emulate these shapes. Take a chance. Find your own way. A masterpiece, the sum of all your parts, worthy of display. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really like the way you brought all the voices of the shapes to life. This is such a wonderful write by Kate, bringing to life the different shapes and the idea of those shapes that are, you know, those people, a metaphor for those people who want everything symmetrical and uniformed and don't step out of line. But the way her end lines speak on the idea of embrace your quirks, embrace your uniqueness, and be true to yourself, because you're going to find those people who find you worthy, who love you for who you are, rather than expect you to fit into a box. So this was very well done. And Dottie, your thoughts?
Well, I'm thinking about Sesame Street right now. all the shapes and all the triangle and, you know, all those little pieces of shapes and how they relate to each other, and they're being personified. They come together and they accept each other's differences, which is what people should do. It uses metaphor, and they embrace their own quirks, and they're proud of their individuality, and each one accepts the others. The shapes represent how people are different, and everyone's unique, and we should respect that, and that everyone has clearly defined angles and personality, and like the square is the funny one and chuckles. I like that. I like thinking of shapes as an elementary art school teacher in the past. I like thinking that shapes are laughing and dancing in this poem. Although they don't say they dance, in my mind they do.
yep.
I like how the shapes relate to each other, and how they come together with their own, you know, with their own realization of each other. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Great comments.
This art teacher would have read this poem to students.
It would make a great poem to read to students in an art class. I have
yeah.
to agree. Wonderful comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Pay not attention to those niggling bees buzzing in your ear. They mean nothing. You can join the clan, and you can be one of the hive-minded, or you can offer up yourself as to whom what you are, something different.
Absolutely.
And with that, we've got about 30 seconds.
Absolutely. It's so important to be true to yourself. And great show, Rex. Thank you, as always, for being my co-host. I truly appreciate you. Thank you very much, Dottie, for calling in. We really appreciate you. It's been great fun. Absolutely.
Thank you for allowing my ignorance to majesty among greatness.
Oh, well, you are great yourself, and we look forward to you joining us more in the future. You know, call in anytime you want. You are always welcome. Yep, and thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all, and we have a few carryovers, which will go either to an after midnight or a break on through show, wherever they're needed. And I'll let people know when I know. So have a good night, everyone.
Thanks, Pam and Red. Thank you.